Good morning, it's 8464CA. You might remember yesterday in the breakfast show, you know, sometimes it's a bit hard to remember yesterday, but I had the opportunity to talk to John Schumann from Red Gum, a really wonderful character, and we're talking about Skytrans, the opportunity, COVID-19, hopefully not going to get in the way, but you can get direct flights from Cairns down to the Whitsundays, return around about $300 at the moment, so a great opportunity, especially for the 5th to the 7th of November. It's the Airlie Beach Festival of Music, Angels, Ben Lee, and of course, as we discussed yesterday, up on stage, John Schumann and Shane Howard together. John might have had the, the heads up with respect to the discussion yesterday, but Shane Howard's got the last word, and I think that's the important one. He joins me this morning. Shane, thank you so much for your time.
Good morning, Murray. How are you? I'm North Queensland.
I'm still kind of rocking in my feet after talking to John Schumann yesterday, so I'm sure you'll be a lot more gentle with me. I've got no doubt about that.
I have to mind my P's and Q's because fans is my old stomping ground in Cairns, so yeah.
Well, I was going to talk about that. I just wanted to go back a few years and say, you know, this is so Australian from an Irish Catholic family, but I noticed you were born on the 26th of January, so on Australia Day. That's pretty special, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of ironic in a way that I should go on to write by Solid Rock in a way. The question was put in my mind way back when I was a kid. You know, apparently when kids were born, I don't know if it's true now, but back then when kids were born on Australia Day, they were given a silver spoon. I never got one, so I'm kind of proud of that. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth anyway.
That's right. Especially from a good Irish Catholic family, the last thing you want to be, you know, recognised as a silver spooner. But look, you know, there's so much we can talk about this morning. I'm not quite sure where to start, but let's start on that because every time we play a Goanna song, we say, "Oh, Kuranda boy, he's a local lad." What was the connection to Kuranda?
Post Goanna, I'd seen too much, really. And there's a line of James Taylor, "Sweet dreams and flying machines in pieces on the ground,"
yeah,
you know.
Sure.
And so I kind of disappeared into North Queensland. I knew a lot of people there, had a lot of great connections, and I'd hitchhiked there when I was like 19, back in 1975. And so I'd long had a kind of fascination with North Queensland. And so I really loved that time there in Cairns and then end up, renting a little place up in Kuranda.
Okay.
And I loved the connection with all the Murray community there, and just great people in North Queensland. I actually got to work as a builder's offsider to just do really different things. I loved the markets in Kuranda when they were genuine markets. They were incredible. Aboriginal people living in the main street. There was a lovely atmosphere, lovely camaraderie. It was kind of a bit idyllic, really. And then out in the Gulf Country after that.
And, you know, Kuranda is still, you know, so idyllic in so many ways. And I'm impressed you got one up on John already because when you came to Kuranda, you were only 19. But we'll move on from that one. What I do want to talk to you about is I had the pleasure just a few months ago, and I guess this is coming back to the most iconic song from Goanna. My partner and I, by default, I was meant to go with my mum. I ended up going to Uluru with my other half. And look, I wanted to be the big, tough bloke that I am. And I didn't want to show it to her. But when I saw Uluru, you know, I saw it in all its glory, you know, that first view, don't you ever tell her. But it actually brought tears to my eyes. Is that the type of impact that Uluru had on you?
Yeah, I mean, I went there for the first time in 1981. And look, I was married young. My wife and I had a couple of kids. She was working. The band wasn't, we weren't making any money. No one knew who we were back then. And I was doing that. I was looking after the kids in the daytime, the little ones, and my wife went and taught. And, we were struggling in Melbourne to make a go of things. And I got very run down. You can imagine coming home late at night after gigs from all around the state. So I got shingles and stuff. The doctor sent me to, I need to take a break. So I ended up going away to Uluru. I'd always wanted to go there. And, you know, I had a little tent and it was pretty basic in those days. But it was the most amazing experience. I wasn't quite prepared for the kind of experience that I had. Not only is it magnetic, like you said, Murray, you can't take your eyes off it. It is overwhelmingly a surprise, the scale of it. It's bigger than the Eiffel Tower. It's enormous. And it's like the Bible. It is the actual curves and folds and the markings on it, everything around it is an Aboriginal Bible that tells the history of that country. And there was an Inmar that night. I had a very, very overwhelmingly powerful experience. There was cultural life in this country. I saw it with my own eyes, and it woke me up to, I went, wow, I don't even know. I think I'm Australian, but I don't even know what it means to be Australian.
Mm. And, you know, when you consider some of that history, I've just read that Ted Strelow's book about Horseshoe Bend. And, you know, when you consider, you know, the impact that, you know, white Australia had on that part of the world, which was really so much, in so many ways, the last outpost in Australia, it is sad. So it's amazing that we've got such iconic, you know, a monolith to what is an incredible culture, an incredible background. And look, you know, I know it was, you know, maybe Karana and also, you know, some of your time there that obviously set you in the future to spend so much time working with Indigenous people.
We're in the healing times now, Murray. There's a lot we got wrong in our history, but we're on that journey now of recovery and healing, and we've got a way to go, but we're on the way.
Yeah, sure, there's no doubt about that. Want to talk to you a little bit more about your Irish connections, because I've certainly got an Irish connection. My brother and my first cousin ended up marrying Irish sisters, so I spent a lot of time in Dublin. Tell me about your connection with Ireland. It's obviously, you know, through family and through background, but you know, you spent a lot of time there, and you've really got some special places too.
Yeah, I didn't realise it growing up. You know, like we were wrapped in all the complicated baggage of Catholicism growing up and big Catholic families, an Irish Catholic family, but I didn't realise the Irishness until I was much older, of course.
Mm.
Where I grew up in southwest Victoria was actually the highest concentration of Irish migration in Australia outside of the cities. It was a very dense population here by workers' history. And my great-grandparents came here in the wake, on all sides came here in the wake of the Great Hunger, the Ngurta Mór, the famine, that decimated, you know, 1.5 million Irish people died and 3 million left in about the 19th century. A really tragic, tragic time. But so, yeah, growing up in the midst of all that, my mother was a beautiful musician. We sang and played. Music was everywhere. There were seven kids. We all sang and played together. We played at community events and church and wherever. I became fascinated with Ireland, and then I got the opportunity to go there in Goanna days when I was supposed to be in England visiting Richard Branson's and Virgin Music label. I turned left and just had a few days to check it out. But then Mary Black in the 90s recorded a song of mine called Flesh and Blood and had a huge hit with it in Ireland. And she went on to record about 8 of my songs, and of course invited me over there to tour with her through Ireland a number of times in Europe and in America. So it built a great friendship with Mary and a band, and some great friendships all around. It threw me head first in the same way that I'd kind of fallen into Aboriginal Australia and that cultural depth. That kind of prepared me for the culture I found myself in Ireland, and that very deep journey down into the beautiful well of Irish music and Irish history.
It's amazing. It really is. It's so inspirational in so many ways. Look, we've got to wrap up, and there's I've got 3 more things I want to ask you, but we probably won't get to them all. I just want to quickly say, every time I hear Razor's Edge, I always think it's one of the most underrated songs. It's, you know, particularly for Queenslanders, it's a great song. I just quickly want to, I guess, focus a little bit more on what's happening, you know, when we see you here in Queensland for the Early Beach Festival of Music. Let the Franklin flow. I mean, even John Shimon, when he said, you know, he first heard it, he thought that's a great song. But you're really kind of, you know, you were butting in on his territory though, weren't you?
Not at all. He was a Johnny Come
Lately. He told me to say that. He told me to say that to you.
Well, back in the 80s, I guess we saw ourselves as kind of, you know, stepping on each other's patches. So when we first met backstage at the Stop the Drop concert in 1983, you know, and we eyed each other off. But I'd just come back from the Franklin River. Bob Brown had said, go down and see for yourself. I did. I wrote the Franklin song. I was deeply moved. I went backstage. You know, it was midnight order, 30,000 people at the My Music Bowl. Went backstage and saw John, and I said, look, I've got this song, you know, great mate, if you want to join us, please feel free. Great, yeah, let's run through it. He was straight into it. He was Look, you'll never die wondering what John thinks, you know. And I value his directness and his honesty. And look, if you're in a fight, he's the sort of guy that you want to have in your corner. Yeah, we're good mates. We don't agree on everything, but we stand back to back on a lot of the issues that really matter. And, you know, so we first connected at that point. You know, I then joined him for a divorce in Melbourne. We, in the early 2000s, you know, and then ran to at a footy game in Adelaide, you know, about 5 or 6 years ago, and he said, we've got to do something. So we wrote a song together, started touring together, did some shows together. We were doing festivals, and, yeah, that's where we find ourselves at this very moment. And with the Airlie Beach Festival of Music, which is the kind of latest incarnation of our bedrock and dirt band. So it's a great band, big band, six-piece band. So we're rocking out on solid rock, Only 19, all those great iconic songs. I mean, we are very honoured in a way that we're able to add something very important to the music history of this country.
And look, you know, working together, it's not as if it's, you know, from Shane to John. So I think that, you know, this approach to iconic and amazing Australians. Look, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you this morning. Airlie Beach Festival of Music. Make sure you get your tickets. Get on Skytrans. Get on down 5th to the 7th of November. COVID-19. Trusting is going to work in our favour. Shane Howard, thank you so much for your time this morning, and thanks for your sense of humour as well.
Barry, thank you too. Thanks for taking the time, and a warm regards to everyone in North Queensland at Tamari time. And I should say that Razor's Edge, you mentioned before, was actually, a lot of that song got written. I was busted flat in Baton Rouge. I was busted flat in Cairns. And I had to sell my guitar to get back home. Razor's Edge, a lot of that song came together as a young bloke in that tour, travelling at that time.
David, just the other day, living in